You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 12th of October 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I want to get more into what is going on in the universities and we will begin with the new story that I referred to yesterday about the grade inflation that is going on. Now, a couple of years back I did a podcast with Grandpa Dan, where we reported on a drive to get more black and minority ethnics into universities, particularly black students into universities, and not just to get more of them into universities, but to get top marks for more of them. And at the time, we brought up the average IQ of black Africans. The average IQ of black Africans is actually 70. The average IQ of African Americans and Arabs is 85, and the average IQ for white people is 100. And that comes from the most up-to-date studies that have been done, and it comes from Professor Edward Dutton's book, Making Sense of Race. Now, what this predicts is that you would be very unlikely to see black African students getting the top marks. You would get a few of them because there will always be outliers. There will always be a few that have a very high IQ and a few that have very low IQ, but the majority will have the average IQ. And we suggested at the time that the way that these universities would actually help black Africans to get the top marks would be to actually lower the standards, lower the exams, make it easier for people to take their exams, which would result in the qualifications not having the standing that they once had. And of course, that is exactly what has happened. Universities are causing rampant grade inflation by ignoring poor spelling and grammar under policies to drive inclusivity, regulators say. So this is not us here at Radio Albion saying this. This is actually now what the university regulators are saying. The Office for Students said tutors across the sector are wrongly using the Equality Act to give undergraduates top marks, even if they cannot write to a good enough standard. Well, how else are these universities supposed to get a certain quota of black Africans into top marks if they aren't to make the exams easier? How else are they supposed to do this? You cannot fit more than a pint of water into a pint glass. If you have a certain amount of IQ, you're not going to be able to increase that because most of IQ is inherited. There is a certain amount that it can be increased by the environment, particularly when you are very young. In actual fact, when people are very young, we actually see that black African students will outdo their white classmate because the black students may have reached the limits of what they're going to be capable of by the time that they are 14, whereas the white students will continue advancing after that point. So it can be that, I mean, and you often hear this, you might hear of a white parent with a black partner talking about what a bright genius their mixed race child is. And that's because the child is 7 or 8 years old and is outdoing the rest of the students in the class. But then by the time they get to their teenage years, they don't continue to advance while the white students will advance around them. So this is the real reason why there is this difference in the people groups that actually get the top marks. And this is well documented. But because the mainstream narrative is to assume that everybody is exactly the same and everybody is equal, despite the fact that our eyes tell us that that is not actually so, and form is linked to function, and if something has a different form, it has a different function, we decide that we're going to pretend that everybody is exactly the same. And therefore, if everybody is exactly the same and there is a discrepancy between the marks, then there must be a different reason for that. And of course, they say the reason for that is racism. It's because white people are somehow discriminating against black students. But how are the universities discriminating against black students? They're actually discriminating against white students with all the grants and all the drives that there are specifically to get black students into universities. So what these universities have done is they've lowered the standards, and they believe that they are quite right to do this because they've been told that they have to get a higher number of black students with top marks. And if they don't actually do that, then they have to explain why that is. And they will be accused of discrimination or somehow not giving the same chances to these black students that they have actually given to the white students. And of course, we were pointing all of this out years ago, and now it's starting to float to the surface and it's starting to be picked up on by these regulators. Institutions claim requiring a decent level of English would discriminate against migrants. So this is the excuse that they're saying. They're saying that actually expecting people to understand English is discriminatory. And if it is discriminatory, then therefore something has to be done about it. The watchdog found some universities are banning tutors from assessing writing proficiency in most instances. So this isn't just the odd case of this happening. It's in most instances in certain universities, the universities that they investigated. It said the trend will lead to employers having to put up with graduates who are unable to perform written tasks to an appropriate standard. Well, hang on a minute. I thought diversity was a strength. I thought it was a fantastic improvement for these businesses to have graduates that are only there because of what colour they are, what ethnicity they are, rather than actually being there for the qualifications. And of course, now what's happening is the qualifications no longer mean what they used to mean. So the employers are having to put up with employees who are unable to do what they were expecting them to be able to do based on the qualifications. It also warned the policies would end up disadvantaging students with poor English, as it will limit their employment prospects. And I should imagine it also means that the students that do have a good grasp of English, they're not actually being rewarded for it when they should be. They should be rewarded for it. And when people go to university, they should be tested, and they should be tested hard in order to draw the best out from them. It shouldn't be made as easy as possible so that everybody wins. It's kind of like everybody winning a prize in the egg and spoon race instead of only the one person that actually wins the race winning the prize. I mean, where is the incentive to actually excel in things anymore if you're just going to say that everybody can do this and we will just give you the qualification simply for taking part? The OFS today urges universities to reinstate writing guidelines in most subjects or face fines for an erosion of standards. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it, that we've gone so far now that we're saying to people, well, it's okay if you can't read and write. Just the fact of your ethnicity will be enough to get you into the university and to get you to pass the qualification. Susan Lapworth, Director of Regulations, said some universities and colleges ask academics to ignore poor spelling, punctuation, and grammar to make assessments more inclusive. It threatens to undermine standards as well as public confidence in the value of a degree. So I guess people are actually sending in their assignments written in text speak. And I guess this also explains why we see so many typos and grammar errors in mainstream articles. I mean, years ago, you never used to see typos and mistakes in newspaper articles. Nowadays, if you look on the Daily Mail website, you won't be able to find an article there that actually has correct grammar and doesn't have typos in it. It's just full of them. She said the OFS would start punishing universities from next autumn if they continue to lack rigour. The common features we have seen in assessment policies suggest that poor spelling, punctuation and grammar may be accepted across the sector, she added. So it's right the way across all the universities are now doing this. The report's authors visited a sample of unnamed universities and found many were citing the Equality Act as a reason to allow bad written English. One institution said deducting marks for spelling would violate the rights of those whose first language is not English. And I guess they must actually be doing this in English lessons as well. They must be saying that if you can't actually speak English, then it must be discriminatory against you to not allow you to pass in the English lesson. Another institution demands students be clearly informed that they will not lose marks for poor language as long as it does not detract from meaning. The report said the trend was likely to be contributing to unexplained grade inflation, which has seen the proportion of students awarded at least a 2.1 climb from 67% to 79%. In just 8 years. So they think this is an unexplained grade inflation. I think it is an entirely predicted grade inflation. This is what happens when you have diversity quotas at universities. And this is what happens when you have an Equality Act that people bring up and use to claim that any differences that there actually are in life outcomes for the different ethnicities can only be explained by racism, that can only be explained by discrimination. And this is what happens when we ignore reality, when we ignore the biological reality that there are differences between ethnicities. It added, if the policies identified in this report are leading to students getting higher marks than they otherwise would, then this not only undermines the rigour of assessment processes, but also contributes to unexplained grade inflation. I mean, another thing that's incredible about this is that the average IQ of the country has obviously been going down since we started with multiculturalism and importing people with lower average IQs from around the world. So the average IQ of the country has been going down, and the number of geniuses that we have in the country gets smaller and smaller every year, and yet we keep having this increase in supposedly super bright people that get a 2-1 in their degrees. It added that ignoring poor standards would end up negating social benefit and also cheating taxpayers. And I believe that people shouldn't have to pay to go to university, but they should have to be the very, very brightest and the very, very best. And they should have the hardest exams possible to ascertain whether these people are going to be of benefit to the nation to actually go through the rigorous training that you get at university. We should be looking at it as we want to find the brightest that there are among us so that we can give them all the resources, we can give them all the training that they need so that when they come out of university, they're able to invent things and discover things that are going to benefit the nation as a whole. It should be looked at as an investment. The real value of a nation is in its children. That's what really has anything of actual worth. And human beings can create things, they can build things, but without human beings, we actually have nothing. And we ourselves should be looked upon as having the most value to society, and particularly the brightest among us. But of course, if you're going to have a multicultural country rather than an ethnically homogenous country, then you're going to be wanting to sort of get everybody there into the university, and you're going to be wanting to charge them because you're going to be looking at it as a way to actually make money. which is what's going on now. The universities are charging people to get in, and it's looked at as a business that needs to be making a profit rather than being looked at as a way to train the brightest and the best among us so that they can then increase the general wealth of the nation once they have actually gone through university. Universities UK, which represents vice chancellors, said there is no evidence in what has been presented in the report to suggest the practices causing concern are the norm. But that's the opposite of what the report says. The report says that these practices are widespread. So we're basically now seeing the fulfillment of what myself and Grandpa Dan predicted a couple of years ago. Staying with the universities, but moving on to another subject here. A British university has told students to refrain from using terms such as founding fathers, man-made, masterful, and other words deemed to be sexist or racist. And that's quite incredible. I don't understand this dislike for the word man. The reason why we use the word man is because it includes both males and females. It comes from the first chapter of Genesis in the Bible, where it says that God created man, both male and female created he them. So the word man itself includes both male and female. So we don't need to change things like fireman or policeman, because it also includes women. The fact that feminists don't like it, they don't like to be included in a word that includes both men and women, really shows a dislike of men rather than anything else, because they're saying we don't want to come under the same heading that you do. So I really don't understand this dislike of the word man. And when they're saying masterful here as well, they don't like the word master. But when you think of master in the context that it is being used here, masterful or masters at university, then you think of master and disciples, don't you? Or you think of master and students. You don't necessarily think of master and servant, and you certainly don't think of master and slave. The woke language policing has now extended to Aston University in Birmingham in the north of England, with the sociology department issuing a list of proscribed terms and words to undergraduate students. I mean, who would have thought 10 years ago, 20 years ago, that we would actually have the policing of language? And if people weren't using the most up-to-date and trendy language, that they could actually be accused of crimes by law. I mean, people can get accused of being racist or being homophobic by using some of these words, or for being misogynistic, for not using words that feminists have decided should be used, rather than using a word that includes both males and females. Some of the now banned terms include the phrases old masters, master copy, one-man show, forefathers, seminal, man-made, and masterful, according to documents leaked by a student to the Free Speech Union, which seeks to protect speech on British campuses. I mean, what do they think is the alternative to forefathers? Do they really think that it wasn't the forefathers that fathered the nation, or the forefathers that built the country? I mean, that's the term forefather. It is specific. That is talking about the males of the past, the males that sired the nation. This goes back to the nation being an ethnic group rather than a group of people that all live together in a country. A nation is a group of people who are united through their ancestors, through their forefathers. So they're going to try and do away with this term, I guess, so that they can pretend that there's no such thing as forefathers, and that somehow we are all related to peoples that are of a completely different ethnicity to us. Other phrases which drew the ire of the academics, who openly pronounced their support for the far-left Black Lives Matter movement, include civilization, immigrants, third world, tribe, non-white, and native, for supposedly propagating racism and colonial thinking. So they don't even like the word civilization. If it wasn't for civilization, they would not even be able to be explaining these things to the people around them. If it wasn't for civilization, they wouldn't even know how to read and write, let alone be able to communicate with people through telecommunications and through the internet. What are we supposed to describe immigrants as, if not immigrants? I mean, what is wrong with the word tribe to talk about various different tribes of people? You start out with a clan, you grow into a tribe, and the tribe grows into a nation. And the nation gives its blood to defend its territory, which then becomes its homeland. I mean, every country in the world has been paid for through the blood of the forefathers and through the blood of the ancestors fighting to defend that nation. That's why homelands belong to the people that live there. And they can point to their ancestors that are buried in the soil as their birthright, as their claim to that land that they are living on. Native, what is wrong with using the word native? I guess because it also applies to white people who are native to their countries, as well as to non-white people who are native to their countries that are in the warmer regions of the world. The guide goes on to attack the very concept of Britishness, stating that the idea of British can imply a false sense of unity. And I would agree with that, because nowadays they use the word British to talk about citizens. And if you're a British citizen, it has no bearing whatsoever on your ethnicity. Any ethnicity in the world can be a British citizen. And if you're going to have all different ethnicities together within this group that is called British, then that does imply a false sense of unity, because that unity of having shared ancestry, which you have with the ethnicity, is not there. And of course, as nationalists, we think ethnicity should be linked to citizenship, and we think it was not a good idea to do away with that and tell people of different ethnicities that they are actually British, because it is, in effect, stealing our identity from us and handing it to others. But is it really stealing if we were the ones that did it? Of course, you can't forget that we are the ones that did this. We're the ones that decided that we were going to make all these different ethnicities into citizens. And you can't steal from yourself. So perhaps I shouldn't use that terminology for it. We willingly gave our identity to the other ethnicities of the world. And as nationalists, what we are saying is we don't think this was a good idea. And we would like to go back to how it was. And if we can't go back to how it was, then the least we should be able to do is to form advocacy groups for our group within society. The same as all the other ethnicities that are within our societies, they can form advocacy groups. We have advocacy groups for Jews, advocacy groups for blacks. We have advocacy groups for homosexuals. When all minorities are encouraged to have advocacy groups. But as soon as white people try and say, well, we would like to have an advocacy group for ourselves to speak up for the way that the government's policies are going to specifically affect our group, we're accused of being white supremacists, neo-Nazi racists, and we should be banned. So all we're asking for is to be treated equally with the rest of society. If we cannot go back to having citizenship based on ethnicity, then we should at least be able to still unite around our ethnicity. In a letter to the school, the General Secretary of the Free Speech Union, Toby Young, argued that the guidance contravenes Aston University's own freedom of speech policy, which states the freedom to challenge conventional wisdom is an essential part of being a university, even if that process is uncomfortable for those who are being challenged. And of course, all universities are now ignoring the whole point of their being a university, which is to challenge conventional wisdom and to challenge the beliefs of the people that are going there. And instead, it's been turned on its head and people are being forced to go along with a preconceived narrative. They're being forced to confess their guilt before entering the university if they happen to be white. They have to confess the fact that they have white privilege and that they are responsible for the different outcomes, the different life outcomes of the different ethnicities before they're even allowed into the university, whether they agree with that or not. So they're being asked, a lot of people have been asked to go against their conscience before they can even be educated. And what's going to happen now once they have been educated and once they do get their qualifications is that their qualifications are going to mean nothing anyway because of the lowering of the standards. Young said that the university should withdraw the guidance and remind the students of their right to challenge the status quo. Writing, it is difficult to see how students would feel empowered to challenge conventional wisdom when the guide takes such an unapologetically doctrinal tone. And of course, don't forget that the guide was written by people that are big supporters of Black Lives Matter, so that they are supporters of a political movement, and yet the university is supposed to be completely unbiased. The Free Speech Union also asserted that the guidance is in violation of Section 43 of the 1986 Education Act, which requires universities to uphold and protect freedom of speech. And of course, they just ignore our rights to freedom of speech today. They say that they can be curtailed by the Public Order Act and by various legislation about so-called hate speech, which is really just a way to deflect attention away from the people that are really being criticised. Because, of course, when we talk about these things, we're criticising our government for putting these policies into action. And the response that we get is that, oh, no, you're not. You're just trying to incite hatred against minorities, which would be an absolutely pointless thing to do. It would be a pointless waste of emotion. What we're trying to do is to put pressure on the government to change its policies. And we're also hoping to educate people on these things that we see that are going on around us that we see as being harmful to the nation. They weaken the nation. If you have to self-censor and you can't speak your mind in the way that you wish to, then that's going to weaken us as a people, isn't it? It's going to actually weaken democracy. And of course, we're told that the nationalists are the threat to democracy. But if you're going to silence people's point of view because you don't like it or because they have a different opinion to you, then how is that upholding the principle of democracy, where you're supposed to have debate and the best ideas are supposed to float to the surface? You can't have that if you're constantly self-censoring. A spokeswoman for the School of Social Sciences and Humanities at Aston University defended the woke guidance, however, telling the Times that sociologists are trained to think critically about language, and therefore the practice of examining how language can perpetuate power structures is a key part of both the subject curriculum and the employability skills that we develop. Well, it looks to me as if they're just trying to police people's language. They're just trying to encourage people to self-censor. And they're basically punishing people for not being up to date with the most trendy and fashionable language that is being used. They're trying to indoctrinate students rather than teaching students to learn how to educate themselves. That they're not giving students the tools that they need to actually develop as people and become productive members of society. That they're just teaching them to repeat the various diversity mantras that we have. And I guess they're hoping that if they can do away with the language and they can do away with words for these things, then the concepts themselves will disappear. And of course, by doing that, they are effectively confirming what we say about how in Africa, the Zulu language dictionary doesn't actually have any words for abstract concepts. And we suggest that since the Zulu language doesn't actually have words for abstract concepts, that must mean that Zulus are not capable of thinking of abstract ideas. So they are, in effect, by doing this, they're actually confirming that they accept that particular theory and are going to put it in practice by trying to ban certain words in the English language, thinking that if they do that, then the concepts will disappear. Interesting how their very policy confirms the veracity of that theory. Over the past year, there have been similar language guides published in universities throughout Britain, including Manchester, which issued a lengthy language code to professors saying that they should abandon terms like mother and man in order to be more inclusive. I mean, what could be more inclusive than man? It includes all men and all women. It includes all of mankind when you say the word man. Are they trying to do away with that? Are they trying to do away with the concept of man? We're just going to end up with not being able to actually define anything. And of course, all knowledge comes from defining things and becoming better and better and refining it down so that the definitions become more and more accurate. And the way that we do that is we discriminate between one object and another. And what we're doing here is we're going backwards. We're going backwards and saying you should not be discriminating between one object and another. We should all just be looking at everything as being the same, everything just being the average. And that is what we see happening. We see us reverting to the average. We're just going backwards. I mean, part of this, you can see in this government's push, or the Conservative Party's push at the moment, to do what they call levelling up. Levelling up, they say, is going to actually raise people up. But you can't level things up. All you can do is squash things down until they are all level. It's actually an impossibility. You cannot level things upwards. You can only level things downwards. That is what we see going on. Everything is just going downwards. Of course, apart from nationalism. Nationalism continues to gather strengths. It goes from strength to strength, and more people join us. And the standards in nationalism keep rising, where we keep encouraging the best in one another. And if you want to get involved in that, then I suggest that you go to patrioticalternative.org.uk and get in touch with them and join your local regional group and start working on self-improvement. And you will find people there that are quite happy to use terms like man and mother and plenty of other terms that I'm sure within the next 10 years will all be seen as politically incorrect. But they won't be seen as politically incorrect, at least for the near future, because we have people like ourselves here at RadioAlbion.com pointing these things out. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.